are listening to Urban Conversation. This is your host, Miguel Marie. I also have one of my great co-hosts on with me tonight. Say good evening. Can you hear?
Yes, I'm here. I'm on Marie
is here. Okay. I must have threw you off because I didn't say your name. I just called you my wonderful one of them. I don't know where our other one is, but how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. Can't complain. How about yourself?
I am a little tired, but I'm excited about this topic because I know it's going to be interesting. So, so first of all, before we get into our topic tonight, I want to give our listeners the number. You'll be able to call in and ask any questions that you want. I know I do realize that we have a lot of people that call in just to listen to the show. So about 30 minutes into the show, if you want to ask any questions and you don't want to post it on our forum page on Facebook, Urban Conversation Radio, you can call us in. That's 30 minutes after the hour. So the number is 347-677-0626. So you could call us and give us your feedback on the topic, as well as you can post questions. You can also inbox myself or Manuel as well. But before we get into the topic about self-sabotage, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on this week in the news. And I want to start with this one, okay? And I know that when I say his name, you should know the story behind it. So Darren Sharper.
Oh, God. Oh, don't get me started. Don't get me started. Oh.
I am, and we can't spend too much time, but I am so disturbed. For one, okay, for those that don't know, you should know because you need to stay abreast to what's going on. He raped, what is it? I think, well, let's just say he got charged for the rapes of 9 women, correct?
He did it.
Right. But yeah, it could be more. We don't know if it's more, but we'll just go by what he's been charged with. But it gets crazier because he's, you know, whatever the lawyer that he had some great people, you know, doing some stuff that's unbelievable. He got like a year for each counts of these rapes. And then he's got these crazy stipulations as well, which one of them is this penile monitor thingamajigga. Like, have you heard of that before this case? Have you ever heard? I have never heard of it. Have you ever heard of that?
No. I mean, no. Like, how? I don't know how. I don't know what. I don't know how did they even come up with the concept? And for those that don't know, I mean, he's accused of drugging and sexually assaulting, like, several women over the course of, like, 3 or 4 years as he was a saint, and it's across different states. And to give a little background, I mean, the Saints was his third team, you know, just to give a little background. He was in the NFL for a long time. Started off with the Green Bay Packers, played for the Minnesota Vikings, then went to the Saints, won a Super Bowl. Shortly after that, he retired. And somewhere while he was with the Saints, this dude was flying around drugging women. And then when he went into retirement,
his mom.
The same thing. Yeah, so me personally, I think there are some people who have a particular fixation. I don't want to go as far as necrophilia or whatever, but there are people who like some morbid sexual activities. And I personally think that perhaps he just liked sexual relations with drugged, comatose, borderline, cadaverous women. Some people are into that.
Yeah, and hold on, that's nothing to laugh about, but I also want to...
Not at all.
No. James Manning, our other co-host, we got you. Are you here? Can you hear us?
I can hear you. I'm just listening up, so I'm ready to go.
Okay, so, but for, and just, you know, just for the record, we know that rape is not, because I hear some disturbing stuff that people say, you know, on different forums and, you know, oh, he could have got sex from anyone and he, you know, he didn't have to do. Rape is
not exactly.
Rape is about control and power. It has nothing to do with how good looking the attacker is. And people really, you know, they insist, you know, the ignorance of that really needs to change. It's like, it doesn't matter. You know, we have this, I guess a lot of people have this idea that, you know, rapists are just, you know, the bottom of the barrel type of people. And,
no,
you know, they're
absolutely not.
And exactly. And a lot of times it is people that have power and have money and have, you know, fame that, you know, it's something, you know, triggers or it's already there. I think they're pretty close to it, of course.
Or they can have a little bit more morbid fixation that the average or that most women won't co-sign.
Because drugging them and they're just basically laying there lifeless.
Exactly. That's his thing, you know. And I've talked about that with people on different levels. When you're talking about rape in general, when you're talking about rape, molestation, sexual assault, people have different things that they like, you know, and certain things are suppressed because, you know, society says that's not okay. And certain stuff shouldn't be okay. But that doesn't mean that the person doesn't have a desire to partake. So when they can't find that woman or that man who's going to participate in a particular activity, that doesn't mean that they don't still have that desire. That means they're going to find a victim. And that's what it boils down to.
And here's the thing. I don't feel sorry for him at all for
all
the crazy.
Hell no.
Yeah, and I don't think. So James. So here, James, and I need you to chime in because you know I know that you're a lot like me and Manuel as well, reading a lot of stuff and you like information. So here's the thing. I've never heard of the penile monitor, and I really want someone to explain to me exactly why. Because the thing is, of course, they already know what gets this guy off. I mean, and so he,
exactly.
You know, what are the details of the penile monitor? Like if he get, you know, are they going to bring him in a room, you know, periodically and make him look at, you know, images of, you know, violent sexual acts? And if he gets an erect, I mean, who, do you, either of you guys know what the whole
I believe it's something like just like an ankle monitor where they can monitor the blood flow going. And there is, it seems quite disturbing actually that something like this, only because, you know, does it flip off? Let's say if he's just watching television, how do they monitor something? And it seems very dangerous too. It seems like, okay, if I can control myself in that aspect of getting an erection, I can still assault a woman.
There you go.
And maintain, if I can maintain some control during that assault and get off other ways, it seems dangerous to me. And the fact that the police did not take the claim serious of the women until he got to L.A. And I think they said he assaulted four women in a 24-hour period.
Exactly.
Tell
yeah.
me he was
yeah.
escalating, you know,
but
to a level that.
But to be honest, that's not so unbelievable. That happens all the time, even with men that are not in the limelight and that don't have that level of fame. The reason why so many rape victims don't come forward is because oftentimes it's not taken seriously. So I'm not even shocked by that.
I'm not shocked by it. I just think that the level had they for him, because he had a record being in New Orleans and other places, that had they just simply said, okay, let's inquire about this, they would have, red flags would have shown up, but the fact that they didn't. So I think that's another part. But this penal display, I think it does something with the blood flow. I have no idea how he got that. he has a great lawyer, that's for sure. It just shows you what money can buy. Because anyone else, they would go to jail.
Now, something that James said that's really interesting. He mentioned how, you know, okay, what if he can control himself for certain periods of time while he's being monitored, and then, you know, when he's not being monitored, he can, you know, lose control and do what he wants, even still assault someone or whatever. And I would take that as far as to, and he knows this, James is prior military, and military, law enforcement, we know one thing. There are people who have so much self-control, they can pass lie detector tests, they can fly under the radar, any sort of test, blood flow, because when you can control your heart rate and slow your thinking down and just concentrate, it's almost like a level of meditation. And he's a trained athlete. They understand physiological control over their body, their mind, their muscles, and their memory. So to assume that just monitoring his blood flow or anything else is going to be enough to say, okay, he's not doing something or he will no longer do it, that's just retarded. Like you said, he had to have a good lawyer, boy. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And all things scared of me is now women are going to start inquiring about penile monitoring devices like that.
Leave it to you to spin it. Wait. Okay, so no. We got to get off of that because that's not even our topic tonight. we can go on and on. See, leave it to Manuel to spin that issue.
Yeah. Kind of watch me what I do.
Right. So she's gonna be like, okay, so what was that with that erection you got at 3 o'clock today? You were with me, so why was you erect?
I was thinking about you, girl.
Lies. That's what she's gonna tell you. Okay, so this one, one more, because this story, and just like all of them that have been happening over, I mean, that is nothing new. But Walter Scott, I know that you guys have heard in South Carolina, that was gunned down by Mr. Michael. How do you say his last name? Killer. What's his last name? Michael Flavor, Roger, something like that. South Carolina police officer that was caught on, you know, the cell phone video shooting Walter Scott
Eight
in
shots.
The back as he ran. Yeah, you know, and what was so, I mean, I can't even preface that anymore with what's so crazy, because it's, all of it is crazy. Have you guys ever had someone running from you that you felt in danger for your safety? Someone that was leaving your presence, you know, putting more and more physical space in between you. They're running from you, not running towards you. Have you ever had an encounter like that where you felt, oh, my God, I'm in danger because this person is running away from me?
Hell. Oh, yeah. My daughters or my children. If I'm going to go spank them and they take off one other direction, I can. Well, no, I don't feel in danger, but they feel in danger.
It's so ridiculous that he first tried to say that he felt.
It's impossible. It's impossible. I don't know. This is one of those things that it was caught on video, and all we can say that if it wasn't caught on video, what would the outcome have been?
Oh, I can tell you what the outcome of it has been.
We know, but what I'm saying is,
right,
if we saw 8 shots fired and he was running away, that means he knew that something bad was about to happen to him.
Yes.
And that's the scary part.
That's the scary part.
Like, he took off running from a cop. I have been in the hood with boys, and we've been walking around, and we fit the description, and it was years and years ago, we fit the description, and we walked up, and the cops pulled in front of us, and they got on the horn, and they stepped out, and all three of us, it was me, my brother, and another friend of mine, and one particular friend of mine had his hands in his pocket, so the cop yelled out, hey, don't have your hands in your pocket, And so, you know, me, I'm nervous, so we good, you know. So I can understand that point. But when a person turns their back and runs, the average cop, they give chase. They don't send bullets.
I don't know about the average cop pursuing.
Yeah,
he's a 50-year-old man. He was a veteran. He wasn't in the best shape. I mean, a lot of, you know, how they love to slander the victim. I mean, that's, victim shaming is nothing new. So, of course, you know, they wanted to try to pull up as much dirt as they could. The assumptions that are going is that when he took off out of the car, it's because he had a warrant. You know, wasn't paying the child support. But when you look at this guy running, and I mean, it barely was a run to me, and I'm just thinking,
it was a trot.
Right, he wasn't in like prime physical condition, so it was just real. I think that was even made it even more heartbreaking. It was sad, but we have to move on. And you know, right now they have this guy. You know, of course he can't be in an open population. Because, you know, they're going to get him. So they said they have to empty out, like, the whole cell block before they transfer this cop, you know.
No. They need to put him in the – you know what? Let me not go there.
It's already done. They have him. He's isolated. He's not in – you know, they already know that if they put him in main population, that he's going to get taken out. So they are definitely protecting him, and we'll just – We'll keep up with what's going on with this story and all the many others of our black men and women that are getting shot down like animals. Anyway, Manuel, are you drinking tonight? Do you have anything in the glass? Because
a little something, but, you know. Actually, the last couple of weeks. You know, I've been a little bit, you know, since our last show. You know, I'm trying not to drink during the week. I'm only doing, like, my weekends, something like, you know, just, you know, I need to turn back the clock a little bit, you know what I'm saying? So, no, so I got a little something tonight, but, you know, I'm not as nice as I normally would be.
Okay.
Normally I'm on a sick and drink.
Oh, Lord. Okay, and I have a bone to pick with James, and I'm going to do it on air because this is – Yes, I'm gonna get him, and I have to get him about some other stuff, but I won't do that on air. Okay, so James, check this out.
Yes,
you posted your little pictures on Facebook of this pulled pork sandwich, whatever that you created. And first of all, I want to say you're wrong for that, and you need to if you can't share it, you know, you sit up there putting all these good pictures on there, the stuff is looking good, you got people hungry, you're not putting out the recipe. I don't understand why. What is your purpose?
Here's the recipe. I told Claxton that I was inventing a new sandwich. It's called the Hawaiian pork slider. And asked about it, and I would say, okay, you know, here's what I'm gonna do. Actually, I do have a recipe up. It's in a different private group, a grilling group that we have. It's only about 20 or 30 of us in that group.
You're all
grillers. So they have the recipe because there's nothing special about it. There's really nothing special. If you know how to make pulled pork of Memphis, it's a slight variation on a Memphis sauce and a standard salad slaw with pineapples and mango, you got it.
Okay, James. Whatever.
I will give him this.
You can do it
just
tomorrow.
James has been like he's like, I kind of watch him from afar, and he claims to be a real master. But let me tell you, with the stuff that he says is bona fide, actual grill master stuff. Like, the dude knows what he's talking about because I come from
I know he does.
Yeah.
But he needs to stop posting that stuff. stuff.
But he thinks everybody's supposed to know that. The problem with the grill master is their basic stuff. They assume that everybody's supposed to know that. Like, oh,
exactly.
Everybody knows this.
If you know how to make a pulled pork
and you know how to use it with the drink. No, we don't know, James. How about that? We don't know how to make all of that.
But see, here's the thing. That's why I said it's a Memphis sauce. All you have to do is go up there and Google Memphis sauce, and there are hundreds of them. You just take what ingredients you like, and you do that. The sandwich slaw is a standard sandwich slaw. You can Google that.
Okay. And then I
just took variations on it because, see, here's the thing about Grillmasters, and I'm not gonna stay on this long.
No, you're not.
Everything is about balancing your spices. So because it's a Hawaiian bread, which is sweet, and I have pineapple and mango, which is sweet, that means I have to add more vinegar and acidic flavors to it to balance out the sweetness. So in the grub, I'm going to add more cayenne pepper and chili powder to it to bring it down. It's about the balancing. That's where the mastering comes in at. The ingredients are everything that we know. Your grandmama probably got everything I have in her cabinet. It's just, do you know how to balance the flavors and the spices and the taste? That's where everything comes into play.
Okay, James, whatever. All of this.
James, James, this is what you want to do. Legale says she loves you, you trust her, she trusts you, you love her. Send her the goddamn recipe step by step, piece by piece. She don't want to hear all that grill master stuff.
She said send me
the recipe. Damn it! Like, just do it.
Because all of that you just said, I'm sitting here rolling my eyes. But anyway, I love you guys. Okay, so look, tonight we've gone like way over talking about other stuff, but we're gonna get into the topic. So we're talking about self sabotage or self sabotaging. And I want to kind of hit it as far, you know, on two different spectrums, relationships as well as personal goals and so forth. And I love to read about everything. And I think, you know, people, we don't read enough. And if you've ever been a student, you know that the elements of study don't change with the topic. So you can basically research anything and go out and get books and learn about whatever subject that you want. And this is one particular area because it encompasses so many other areas that I've always had a great interest in. And I want to talk about both sides of that. There's other sides, but I want to kind of stick with the relationships and then those personal goals and so forth. So this is what I want to throw out to you guys, and I don't want a literal definition that you could pull up and go to. You know, I want your personal definition of what self-sabotaging is to you. Start with you, Manuel. Just give me a brief definition of what you feel self-sabotaging is.
The first one I was given, I'll give another one later, but the first one is self-doubt. It's when people just totally, and not self-doubt because you lack talent or lack ability or lack knowledge or anything else or intelligence, but self-doubt because you fear doing something that you've never done before. And that can go with relationships and it can go with anything else, is because sometimes people just have this big cloud over them, and it's sometimes in the verbiage. You ever listen to somebody talk and they say, if I can, or I'm going to try. And with my children, and with my peers, you know, I try to take it away from the verbiage. Say, I'm going to do. I'm not trying to do. I'm going to do. And I'm not when I, not if I accomplish, when I accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes self-sabotage is as simple as language, because if we're speaking it to the public, that's what we speak to ourselves. If that's what I say to you, if I say it to you on air, you can guarantee I've said it to myself a million times. So sometimes self-sabotage is just self-doubt, and it can stem from all sorts of things, you know, childhood, you know, people never believing in you, you know, which leads you to never believe in yourself. And I don't want to ramble, because I want to give, you know, James a chance to weigh in on it. But self-doubt just being one of the biggest components of self-sabotage that I've ever seen in my life.
But before I go to James, you hit it. It's not, most psychologists believe that when you have those sort of characteristics or ingrained belief systems, that they do come from early life experiences.
They do. Exactly,
because we internalize those, you know, attitudes that were directed to us, and then we sort of project them, you know, outwardly as we get older. So it definitely is something that's formed from early life experiences, just like, you know, just negative seeds that are planted. So you hit that. But James, go ahead really quick and give me your personal definition of what you feel self-sabotage is.
I'm going to start with a simple premise of getting in your own way and doing things that you set a goal, and then you understand the steps required to reach the goal, but yet and still you do something completely opposite that is an antithesis to the goal you're trying to reach. So if you're saying that, hey, in a relationship, wow, I really want to have this relationship. I love this woman. I'm really feeling I want to do everything. But as soon as Friday night comes, you're out with the boys. And then you're wondering, man, why is she having a problem? Maybe I'll go pick her up on Saturday afternoon. But guess what? Saturday, I got to go play golfing with the boys. And then, you know, you call on Tuesday and say, hey, you know, let's hang out this weekend. She's like, okay, I'm going to give you a chance because I'm really trying to get this. You hang out on Friday night with her, but all the time you're texting your boys, hey, what's the score to the game? Getting in your own way, I think, is doing the things that are actually hurting your aspect of reaching your goal, because
counterproductive.
Yeah, you're just being counterproductive, and you're doing it really, maybe sometimes you're not conscious of the fact that you're doing it, but I think there is some type of conscious element to it that, hey, I know I say what I want to do, but I'm going to do this either out of habit, out of necessity, out of fear, whatever it is, there's something there that is blocking you from reaching that goal, and it's no one else doing but yourself. That's what I think self-sabotaging is.
I think all of that. I love all of that. I think it's not just one of those, but every last one of them, out of fear, out of habits, you know, the subconscious. So, okay, let's go here. There is, and I'm going from memory, but I want to find, I'll look for this book later and I'll post it on our forum page in case someone wants to get it and read it, whatever, you can. Someone is giving us a lot of noise. Is that the grill master, or is that you, Manuel?
That is not me.
That was me. I'm sorry. I'm good. I'm sorry.
are you sure you're okay over there?
I am good. I stepped up and went and got something out of a drawer real quick.
Okay.
A lot of feedback.
Okay, so here's the area that we're going to go into is relationships, because everybody seems to have you know, such a desire to talk about relationships, the ins and outs, why they're not successful, why they are successful. It's a billion-dollar industry on relationship materials, books, tapes, and so forth. So we know that this is something that people, that we, society, wants to understand better and get, you know, get it down. But we, you know, so many of us seem to mess it up. And I've been guilty. You guys have been guilty. And Manuel is still guilty of giving us noise. So I'm gonna mute you in a second if you don't get that under control. But here was, I was reading something, and don't ask me what book or where it came from, but they were kind of giving you questions, kind of, you know, ask yourself this. And one of the questions that was posed, and this was a while back, but one of the questions was something like, you know, what would all of your exes say? What would be the main complaint that your exes said about you? Are all of the complaints similar? And this was kind of getting people to the mindset that it's not the other person that's always messing it up. We have to take that responsibility, you know, and kind of, you know, really, really dig in deep and look at ourselves and say that, you know, it's not this other person that's messing this up. I have a hand to play in this. And if all of your exes have the same or similar complaints about you, you know that you got some issues that you need to work on. And I want to ask you guys, first of all, we know that you're married, James, so but I know that you've had other relationships before you got married. Would you say that your exes, would they have, like, similar complaints about you? Or were they all just saying, like, you were just perfect and you're the one that got away?
No. It depends on which era of my life you chose. let's skip to 30s. Let's skip to 30. Okay.
Let's skip to
30. So 30, it would be a lot of them would say focus. You know, really, there are times where I'm just simply not focused on a relationship, or I'm inconsistent. You know, it's sometimes I'm all in, and then other times I seem like I'm in another world and doing my own thing and have my own interests, and I'm not bringing them into that world. It's like I compartmentalize people in how I do things. That would be a consistent, that inconsistency would be a consistent statement exes would make about me.
And so you clearly, as you got older, you got a handle on that, and you changed that.
Yes. And primarily by eliminating the interest that I have outside of my home. So that's where the thing would be. It would be eliminating those interests. Those are gone now. So I think that would be where it would come into play. And in fact, the wife just walked downstairs. Hey, what would you say is the worst thing about me outside of?
Lord.
The worst thing you could say about me? Messy and disorganized. That's the worst thing I got going on right now.
She but said, "What are we doing?"
Bomb.
What? Wow. Okay, I missed that. But hold on. So, okay, Manuel, over to you. What would your exes? What would be the similar complaint that they have, or do your exes? Would they have the same complaint about you?
Well, okay, I have to take the longest relationship I had, which was my marriage, and I would say that there were two complaints. One, when I was younger, I was very cocky and a little bit condescending.
That sounds like James right now.
I could be a little condescending, because one of the things that I didn't understand, like one of the things that I didn't really grasp and it was my own ignorance, and that's what I recognize now, is that everybody isn't as interested in all the things that I was and anybody, you know. So a lot of times if I found someone that might have been ignorant to something that I found to be common knowledge to myself, I was very condescending in my approach, and that would be to my friends, family, spouse. You know, it didn't matter who it was. I would sit there and treat people like they were the biggest idiot in the world if they didn't understand or know the things that I know. And I had to.
I can't believe that about you.
You can't. Of course, because you met. Trust me, you met the new version. But
that was total sarcasm.
Yeah, you know, you need to check my. I will tell you this. I will tell you how bad it was. If you just went through my Facebook timeline, maybe 4 years back, go to 2010, it was a different type of approach. So that was one thing,
right.
And I am selfish. Even to this day, I am still considered selfish. I don't care who I'm involved with on what level, I can be pretty selfish, and it's not because I don't share, is because I do have this demand, and I don't like to share my person. If that makes any sense, I don't like to share my significant other or spouse with anyone outside of children, and that's about it. If you got a kid, I can share that. But I mean, I don't care about your mom.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't care about your friends. Listen, I'm like, look, I come first and all those other people, because I look at it as if when they're all gone, guess who's going to be here, who got your back, and who's holding you down. So I'm very selfish when it comes to that, very selfish. Woo! Bad.
Wow. You know, wait, hold on, because that's disturbing. So you're
no, actually,
me...
but that's not disturbing. Actually, I get that.
No, wait a minute.
I'm not like
you
that,
you...
but I get it.
James, I'm going to mute you if you talk over me. I wasn't asking you if you felt like it was disturbing. I said, in my opinion, it's disturbing. It's a little disturbing. You don't want your... If you're with someone, you don't want them spending time with people.
No,
you know,
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Not that I don't want them spending time. But if there is a decision or a choice, listen, acknowledge me above all others. I mean, I hate to sound like God, but I'm just saying. Acknowledge me. I know it sounds so bad. It's so narcissistic.
You want to come first.
There you go. Above all, except for your child, except for our children, I want to be numero uno, and I want to feel like it. I mean, everybody else can fall into that pecking order, and if we're doing that, are we good? Because that's how I am. My significant other comes before all of us.
Okay, and I don't really have a problem with all of that. You know, putting each other first. You definitely have to do that in a relationship. There's a healthy balance to that as well. You seem like you're teetering though. And
yeah. Yeah.
I want you guys to look. There's a Dr. Randy Gunther, and they give a behavioral list that a lot of people who are self-sabotagers, you know, have. And one of them, Manuel, was needing to be center stage, and it says, you know, pay attention to me. You may feel neglected when your partner doesn't put you first. You get bored when the focus is not on you. Yep. Or verbally monopolize conversations. I don't know. I feel like maybe both you and James kind of have that.
not in a verbal sense. No, see, in a verbal sense, I don't need it. I need it in action. You listen, you can trick me. I'm easy to fool. You can make me think I'm number one, and guess what? I might not even be number one. But just make me think.
Oh.
Lie to me, baby. Listen, lie to me, baby. Pimp me. You know, pimp the hell out of me. Make me feel like I'm number
one.
That's it. All my woman got to do, all she got to do is pimp me. That's it. You know what I'm saying? All she got to do is say, baby, you know what, baby? I was late. I'm sorry. I was such and such had this going on. Oh, my God. She just, I can't believe she kept me away from you. Oh, that bitch.
So do you like your woman to call you master too, or what about you, James? James, you like to be called master?
No, I'm not like that. I don't care about stuff like that.
There's no pet name or anything? Oh, look how James is like trying to pull back now. What?
I think my pet name right now is that nigga in the basement. I don't know. That's what it is. So,
oh, God.
James, so, you make me so sick. Stop. Stop.
So,
okay, look, let me give you some more on the list. Hold on. And these are sabotaging behaviors. So even the listeners that are listening in, You might recognize yourself in some of these. I cannot remember, and forgive me, I will look it up later and find the book. It's Randy Gunther, and these are sabotaging behavioral traits. Insecurity is a big one, and we all know that definitely plays a big part in messing up relationships, because it's not even about whether or not the person is giving you their love and their attention. But if you are an insecure person, you're always going to be doing that defeatist talk to yourself. You know, do they really love me? Will they love me forever? You know, so that's one of the big ones. Needing control is another one. Needing to run the show, you have to be the one that is in charge. You have to know how it's going to play out. And that also goes to intimacy as well. You know, they talk about having difficulties really release, you know, being vulnerable with someone. And so people who need to feel like they're in control have difficulties connecting on a real level of intimacy with the person that they're with. So, and then there's, let me give you one more, Manuel, and then you can take it over. Then there's fear of intimacy, and I can't think of the other one, but fear of intimacy, that's, of course, self-explanatory as well. But what were you going to say?
I have one, and it kind of goes along with assumptions and presumptions. We know assumptions is based off of just stuff out of your own mind, and presumptions are based on actual evidence and facts that you have with a person. But jumping to conclusions based off of presumptions or assumptions, and one of the biggest, for me personally, this is personal.
I would put that with insecurity.
To a degree, you're right, because...
Absolutely, but go ahead, finish. Go in detail
It's when somebody jumps to the worst case in there, and I've experienced this on different levels with different women, and worst case scenario, and I'm going to give a not so deep version of this. One of my exes, one time, her cat was missing, and she said, "The cat's missing. I don't know what happened. Perhaps he got eaten by an alligator."
Oh.
Now we're in Georgia. We're not in Florida. We're not on the coast. And her assumption, because the cat was missing, was the absolute worst case scenario possible. And even though it was humorous in the moment, she would do this periodically. She would jump to worst-case scenarios no matter what happened. So if there was a rift between her and I, if there was a rift between her and friends, there was this worst-case scenario type thing. And I'm like, okay, before you get to G or even Z, there's A, B, and C. Consider, hey, maybe this person had this going on, or maybe this happened, or maybe this happened. Maybe it didn't get as far as other, but sometimes people have, and they've been so scarred in the past by some of those worst case scenarios actually coming to pass, that when they look at things, they automatically jump to the worst, because that's a sort of a wall that they have built up. It's a way that they protect themselves by assuming, hey, the worst case has happened. This guy, he didn't call me, or he didn't respond to me. He's totally not into me. He's got another woman over there. He's got another two other women that he's into. So I'm just going to assume that this dude is just doing the worst. And all he was doing was taking a nap. And that's a bit of self-sabotage, because when you verbalize it or when you show it to the person that you're interested in, we sit back and we're like, this B or this N is crazy. Like, I just took a nap, or I just went to the grocery store, or my phone was there. Who knows what the real situation is, but
they
jumped to the worst-case scenario.
Or they had that penile monitor on you, and you were getting arrested.
You are such an asshole. The penile monitor, you don't go back to that? I'm done. I'm hanging up. I quit. I'm giving up.
No,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Can I interject something here? Because I think another one, and I've ran into this several times, and it's one of those things. You know how people say you can choose to be happy?
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that, because I think there are people who choose to be unhappy. And when you're in a relationship with a person who wakes up in the morning and they look at the world and they choose the most negative aspects of the world.
Yes.
You're sitting there, everything about you is great, except the fact that when we walk out the house, you see something negative and it upsets you. Everything makes you unhappy. Everything makes you sad. And, you know, after a while, it becomes too much of an effort to try to cheer them up, because you're always trying to cheer them up.
Feeding.
And I believe that's one of those areas that you just can, you, insecurity and unhappiness are two areas that you really can't overcome, because it's up to that individual to figure that out. You can't work through them with
you,
it. They have to
you hit that like square on the nail. Like, I mean, that negative energy, that negative spirit is so ingrained. And just like you said, you can love someone and want to make it work with them, but if every turn it's just more defeatist, you know, talking, I mean, you can't. It's poison.
I have a question for LaGale.
Yes, sir. What is it?
I do. And this kind of
and
goes
no,
into
no,
that.
I don't have a penile monitor for my
guy. Oh, my God. You don't hush, girl. No. And I think this goes back to, you know, seeds that have been sown. And I've seen this in some of my female friends, some of the closest. And I know some strong women, some strong black women, some strong women. And sometimes a man will break them down. And so I don't know if you've experienced it or if you've witnessed it, but sometimes a man will go through, they will do the most to break a woman down, her spirit, her soul, her mind, her body. And then the woman that, when she, even though she lets that man go, she's broken down so far. I don't know if you know this, but just either from personal or from somebody you know, what does it take for a woman to recover from being broken down by, because it's easy, because especially if you love that man, you hold everything that he says, you hold everything that he says is biblical truth. So when he breaks you down, how does a woman recover from that and no longer become so insecure to the point where she's no longer, you know, self-sabotaging, so to speak?
I think,
how do you guys get past that?
For me, and I would have to go back to the marriage that I was in that was physically, emotionally, mentally abusive. But I, at the same time, I have a very strong foundation as well. And so it was basically like a battle between those two truths that I knew that I didn't deserve to be in this situation. My mom instilled in us a very strong faith, a very strong love of God, a very strong belief. And when I got older, I came to take those beliefs as my own. And this person, which I would attribute being the one individual that, if anyone could have broken me, he came pretty close to doing that. So when I talk to to women, and I've done conferences. I speak to women all the time. I understand that battle of becoming bitter. I know how easy it is to become bitter and to turn off and not want to be vulnerable anymore, not want to trust anyone. But the way that you combat that is that you have to understand that what one man did to you is not what the next man is. You can't make the next guy pay for what the last guy did. And it's easy to say, but it takes conscious work. It takes being cognizant of that. It takes actually looking at what that next man is doing to you. And if they're treating you right, you have to listen to those actions and not allow yourself to succumb to the past pain. And every person, whether they were in abusive situations or not, it's an introspective work that every person has to do to keep their heart in the right condition. That's not something that takes a day or takes a year. You have to continuously to do that. And so for me, that's what I did. I'm always examining my heart, and I always tell anyone who would ask me, you have to examine your heart. You have to fight against allowing yourself to be bitter because you've been hurt. We've all been hurt. You have to get better, and you have to allow yourself to understand I have responsibilities and what caused me to be in that relationship in the first place. We don't like to take blame. We as humans, we hate to take accountability for situations because, you know, that it's very difficult for us to do. And it doesn't take away the wrong that someone else did to you, but it does make you look at how come you ignored the warning signs? How come you stayed longer than you should have? And those type of questions always cause discomfort because we don't really want to take any blame. But if you want to be a healthier individual, if you want to be someone who can truly receive and attract love and attract positivity, you have to say, you know what, I had a part to play in this relationship failing. I had a part to play in picking the wrong person. I had a part to play in not being the right person for the right person when they came around. So it just takes work. Life and growth takes work.
So you give credit to your foundation. Like, I mean, you put that out there, your foundation. Like, I mean, you spoke about your mother and everything else.
And then there's that level of discipline. Yes.
Absolutely.
And I'm a disciplined person. Your mental strength and your, you know, tapping into that. I mean, I do, you know, 40-day fast, no food.
That's what I was going to ask. Okay.
Yeah.
What are some things that you do to maintain a level of discipline to where you bounce back, to where because everybody, we don't all practice the same things, but one thing I've noticed is that a lot of the same things work for everybody. So that's what I was thinking, like, what is it that you do that you know keeps you in that place, like you said, to bounce back from something that would normally cripple somebody else, like,
and I'm gonna share this real quick, and then I'm gonna throw a question at you and James. One of the things that I did, and this is like decades, this is over a decade ago when I first did this. I'm very spiritual person. I'm not religious. We were born and raised in a church, but I'm not. You know, I study theology. I'm not. You know, I'm not conditioned to follow a lot of the religious nonsense, but spirituality and Christ and that belief, I follow it and I believe it. One of the things that I did so long ago is I felt that I wanted to do a 40-day fast, and not from sun up to sundown, 40 days, no food at all. And people, you know, of course, people, that's impossible, you can't do it. In the church, you don't have that belief system. You know, people, it's not something that is crazy or rare. But for me, I had never done this. I had been introduced to fasting as a child, you know, for maybe half of the day or when the church was, you know, fasting for a few hours. But I, in my own spiritual growth, this was something that I knew I needed to do. And I did it. And the first time I did it, I battled all of these, you know, oh, I'm going to die, you know, what am I doing? I'm crazy. But when I did this, when I went 24 hours every day for 40 days and rejected food and literally lived off of my spirit and lived off of the sustenance that comes from just getting outside of yourself, mind over matter, when I did that, it did something for my whole core as a person. And it's something that I realized that if I could do that, if I could tune in and get deep enough into who I am spiritually and be able to give, you know, discipline myself enough that I'm not even eating food, I can get through some of this crap that we, you know, feel like, oh my God, this is going to overtake me. And that level of discipline has helped me to realize that I'm not going to be broken by the situation. It may hurt, but I know that I have enough strength and I know I have enough discipline in me that I can pull myself out of this with God's help. I can do this. And so for me, that's how I got to that place. You can't break me. You can't get in my head. You might be able to hurt me for a little bit, but no person has that power to break me, because no person is my higher power. And, you know, that's how I did it. I don't know how everybody else did it, but that's part of the process that I did.
I might try that. I think I might have to try like 5 days.
I mean, take it slow. Two days. I believe that everybody should. I think that you should fast. You should choose a day out of the week if that's your starting point. But at least do something, because the reason that food is such a big thing is because we love to eat, and so many people, and that's why when you can reject something that is so natural to you and that is so comforting to you, that's when you really start to tap into that level of discipline that you may feel that you don't even have. And you take it, you take those small steps to get there. Mm. I wouldn't recommend that and I've done it. I used to do it annually at the end of the year, do a 40-day fast at the end of every year. And it's not easy, but to me, it's the most enlightened. I have the most. I'm most clear, and I have a deeper understanding, and I get revelations of things that were very remiss to me otherwise. And so, hey, do what you gotta do. But you guys, look, we don't have a lot of time, and I want one of the things that stood out, one of the authors was talking about, is if you have a belief system that all of your relationships ended because you haven't found the right person, or they ended because of the other person, or you have these triggers that go off when you're in relationships, and every single one of your relationships that's failed, you have these certain triggers that are there, that are present, you are a self-sabotager. You are someone who is, whether subconsciously messing up your relationships, you're doing that. You guys, what are some of the triggers, some of the other triggers that sabotagers have? Real quick, just jump in and throw them out there.
Well, I would say that we spoke on the happiness. I think probably the other thing is that listening to other people is one of, I would venture to say that that's a big one that is, you may not take it that way, but I think listening to other people is one of those. I think one of the biggest things is not knowing what you want. So when you come into a relationship and you say, I want this, this, and this, and when a person is saying, okay, let me try to do that, and then you come back and say, no, well, now I want this, this, and this, I think that can, not knowing what you want from a relationship and what you want from a particular person, I think that can be self-sabotaging. So if you don't really know yourself, you can put yourself in a position where you're always adjusting your needs and your wants, and that can get tiring when you try to figure out, it's like you ask for A, B, C, and then now you want CDE, but really what you need is XYZ. And now I'm out. you know.
I'm gonna let you finish, but I wanna definitely apologize. We have because I didn't take any calls, and I'm so sorry because the people are still online and I don't know who's who. So please forgive me. They need a better system. I need to get a better system. But we're almost out of time. But finish your thought, James, and then Manuel, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to let Manuel go in. I don't want to I have a whole list that I can say.
Mine is the other side, is sometimes people that try to be a chameleon. We understand that men try to, men and women, they want to be loved and they want to be what somebody else wants. So they will totally compromise themselves and become something that somebody else wants, knowing that they're compromising themselves. So she knows she's not into the club. She's not into this scene. She's not into that. She's into, you know, a more modest lifestyle. But in order to garner the favor of this man who she may seek the favor of, she will become a chameleon, or he will become a chameleon, and they totally compromise themselves. And we all know you can only wear that mask for so long until some point your true self comes out, it emerges, and that person realizes you're not who you said you were, and you realize you're not who you were trying to be, and then that's another form of self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
I like that. That's really good because, yeah, how can you keep that facade up if that's not what you are? No. But you guys, and we're going to have to do a part two on this because
we are.
We will. We'll do that. The part two, we'll do that. Because one of the things that is a really, really big issue, and I think a lot of women kind of downplay it, is, you know, the father issue. You know, when you don't have, and let me just put this out here because and hopefully you guys can spend a couple of minutes on the page, but that's a big contributing factor to why so many women have issues with men. And psychologists have talked about, I've read journals and different things where they've broken that down. When a person feels like they've been abandoned as a child, whether literally, physically, that parent wasn't there, or someone that they cared about left, or whether emotionally abandoned, those tendencies, you know, come back into our adult relationship. You're not able to trust a man if daddy wasn't there and you didn't have another strong male figure to give you the example of what a man is. And those things can be so deeply buried that you ask half the women that are struggling relationships, and oh, it ain't about my daddy, I forgave, and you know, I'm not worried about it. But you know, there's that little girl that's inside every woman, and when she's been left in her childhood, that plays into her not being able to trust a man fully. Whether she may really truly want to be with you, but it's always going to come out. It's going to come out in that being overbearing or being insecure. And like you said, seeing what's not there, going to, you know, taking things to the extreme, not having a good filter on their tongue, and all of these different things that come into play. And you really, and that's what I was saying earlier, you really have to get to that place where you say, I want to be honest with myself for myself so that I'm better for me first. And if you see that you don't see men in the right light, you feel like every man is a dog, or every man is going to cheat or has cheated, or, you know, is out to get you, and you're perfect, but you just can't find the right guy, it's not them, it's you. you can't walk around with that mentality thinking that you're this great package and that the only reason that these relationships are ending is because the guy messed it up. I'm sorry, that's not.
And men with mommy issues, and because I'll be honest.
But we're not. But to focus on a very crucial point, I like to stay on that point because you can say we're not talking about the guys because it seems to be a bigger issue with women, because unfortunately, a lot of fathers, you know, they step out. You know,
absolutely.
So we can't put those on the same page. You know, I know that there are guys.
It's rare. You're right. It's rare because I won't even compare men with mama issues to women with daddy issues because we know society statistics. Men are usually the ones who we know. Yeah, it's much heavier.
I'm not taking away from all the great fathers, but you James, Manuel, you guys have dated women. You know how women are. Just remember that as if you have daughters, and for the listeners that have daughters, that crazy chick that you had to deal with that had all those issues, keep that in your mind when you're dealing with your daughter. be there for your daughter when she's young and all throughout her life, because that separation and feeling that abandoned, you know, being abandoned and being hurt from your dad, it plays a very big part in how women are with men.
That's very interesting. I have to apologize if you guys keep hearing me chastise someone in the background. I have two bad dogs.
I didn't hear anything either.
Okay, because I find myself saying, get down, get over there, sit down. And
James, that sounds kind of freaky.
No, associated with, because I'm talking about two Yorkies.
No. Miguel, every single listen, she makes me seem like at the end of every show, she spins it. It gets late, and her mind goes to she got something on her mind that Mr. Legale is about to get it in a few minutes.
No. I don't have that on my mind, but it was just funny how he said.
Don't try to fix it now. Go ahead.
No, because Manuel, you already know. I will say it if that's the case. So I don't have any problem. But but James, you just kind of sounded a little, like get down. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry for being a freak. Please forgive me, God. Forgive me. Okay, but we're gonna have to for those of you that are listening, we appreciate you listening, and we're definitely going to do a part two. For those, I have a couple of people that inboxed me and said that they were calling in because they wanted to chime in. Please forgive me. I got caught up in the conversation. But we're actually going to carry this over to next Sunday so that we can get into this and really get you guys feedback. Any parting thoughts from my co-hosts, Manuel and James? You got any last?
One thing is, I'll be straight up. I honestly learned something from Legale in this one, is that she's on the extreme side of exploring that discipline. I mean, 40 days, 40 nights, that's biblical. You know, seriously. So I'm like, if she can do it, and I've met her, she's just kind of most humble, most meek, cool. She ain't a big person, you know. So I'm just like 40 days, 40 nights. Can I get 48 hours in myself? It's a challenge to me to see how far I can go, and I just challenge other people. Just test yourself. See how far you can go. No food? So, what, that's water only?
No, I'm going to try that for 48 hours.
Oh, I'm sorry,
you know
48
what?
Hours.
And you know what? We can actually we can do a whole show on that, because I'm really, really into that. And of course, there's factors that you want to play into, knowing your body and everything. And like I said, starting from the right point. A lot of people get excited and they're like, oh, if you did it, I could do it. But you really have to. It really is mind over matter, and it really is shutting down, different senses and allowing those other ones to take over. So we could get into it. I can talk about that like all night, but Definitely, if you have an interest in it and you are healthy and of a sound mind, I would love to not only to you, Manuel, but to anybody else that has an interest, you know, definitely walk you through some of some beginning steps of doing that. Don't jump into please as a disclaimer, please. Anybody that listened, please trust me. That was not my first time fasting. I did not just jump into that one day. I've done, you know, a week and then 21 days and so forth. So please don't just jump into anything. I'm not telling nobody to do that. So put that disclaimer out there. James, do you have any parting words for all of your fans?
No, I think what I'm going to do is kind of hold off until we get into this, finish up the topic next week, because I have some additional thoughts as far as going into the self-sabotaging aspect of it. But I'm going to hold off, and I'll send you that recipe so you won't get all hostile and everything.
Oh,
with
God. Yeah, right. You better send her recipe. Thank you.
Thank you, James. See, I knew you liked me. I don't know what just happened.
Did we lose the...
No, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm
still here. I'm still here.
Okay.
Okay, well, we're leaving now, so you guys say goodbye.
All right, then.
All right, y'all have a good night.
All right, and I just want to thank everybody that took the time in to listen. Something crazy just happened. That was really weird. But anyway, make sure, if you have not, get on Facebook and join us on our open forum page, Urban Conversation Radio, as well as joining us on Blog Talk Radio, Urban Conversation. And we will do part two to self-sabotage. It's not them, it's you, on next Sunday. So make sure you mark your calendars and you tune in 9 p.m. Eastern. We will talk to you later. Bye.